he did the Ultra remake of Superstar on DS. And then they just put him in charge. He took over for Return to Dreamland on Wii. And he just did... He did his name's Kumazaki. He did... did Triple Deluxe. He did Planet Robobot. He did Star Allies. And he did Forgotten Land. I haven't played any of these games.
John... it's 3 in the morning.
Then that means there's a bunch more Kirby to play.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Oh, I'm probably not going to talk about that smut game.
Was it not good enough?
No, there's like... smut games are aesthetic, like Sinister Star, and then
Sinister Star had a vibe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that one's got a sequel. I told you that one has a sequel out now.
Yeah, yeah.
But some of them, no.
I just kind of think that is a genre where a lot of shit's kind of get just pumped out. Like, I see porny RPG Maker games pop up on Steam, like, mm-hmm. dime a dozen. So I feel like your odds of blind buying porn games is like, you've got a 70% chance at least of getting something that's going to be very unsatisfying from the porn standpoint, or just very bad, or have a terrible translation. I think it's just a genre where... you've got to kind of go with, like, carefully curated lists and find people that know what they're talking about a lot of the time.
But then who's the curator?
I think I disagree, because you know what? I fucking enjoy fucking DL Psych who's so gay.
I mean, that's fine.
Maybe not this one.
Yeah.
No, I liked it. I had a good time. I'm excited.
They're using your quote on the box. What?
Yeah, the quote on the back of the box is literally...
it's just like it had a complete arc, so that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm actually
like an IO game.
It finished the story, and then I was like, "Look out for more content updates." And I was like, "Oh, well, shit, man! Actually, I'm excited for more content updates.
Really?
You got me."
Yeah, well, so it's almost like Future Fragments in a way, where, hey, man, it's called Future Fragments because it'll continue being released in the future in fragments. Well,
I'm saying they finished the main arc, and uh-huh. then they're saying, you know, we got most of it's in there. Uh-huh. We're going to add some more stuff, though. We're excited about it. And I'm like, you know what? I'm excited too, friends. Let's
okay,
do it.
So it's, yeah, because the Future Fragments thing is like, we just released it's an unfinished ass game. And yeah, we're still exactly. trying, and we are 2 years later still trying to finish it. And I made that joke on Blue Sky uh-huh. about it's called it's called Future Fragments because it's released. It'll all be released in the future in fragments. And, you know, the dev is a good sense of humor, and it was a good sport about it.
That's very funny.
So, like, when people were, like, spreading it around, I knew. I was like, oh, this guy's going to see it. Oh, jeez. It's like, no, so I'm seriously goes. Excited to play your game. I just want to wait till it's finished in the future.
It looks real good, but this.
Yeah, I played the demo. It was fine.
I looked, and this crew, they got multiple other finished games. None of them are in English, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah. Got to deal with that machine translation.
One of them's really, like, dopey ugly 2D art, and the newer ones are really dopey, like Unity Asset Store plus like janky 3D model Kotatsu, not Kotatsu models, like lower level than that.
Define dopey, because dopey is not a word that I really want in my sex. It's not a sexy word. It's not an inherently sexy word.
I like my porn to be kind of my porn games to be kind of silly, because sure. the idea of this porn is more fun and hot because I have to, like, kill goblins and level up in order to earn the porn scenes. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why it's more hot than if I just saw the CG on Pixiv, but it is. That's innately very silly.
Gotta work for
and
it.
And I think owning that is fun. You want to work for it. It's the chase. Thrill of the hunt.
You need a reason. Like, you got to get it up first. You can't just like, oh, like a raw dog. Here you go. You know, all right, start pounding it out. You know,
it's literally like, oh, I am building anticipation for this porn that would, even if the porn would otherwise be completely unremarkable.
Sure.
It just becomes more fun. Mm-hmm. I bought one on DLC, and then found out that it wasn't really a game. It just gave you a bunch of, it was like orc breeding farm. It was just a bunch of assets for making little isometric orc breeding farms. Mm. And I was like,
oh,
I wanted to
yourself.
You can just make the farms. You have all the assets instantly.
Can make the orc. You can make the orc breeding simulator that you want to see. How nice of them. It's getting people started in games dev. It's, you know, helping people make games, which is something that I'm always going to support. So if there's anybody out there who wants to make your own, you know, orc fucking game.
You guys know the podcast hasn't started now, right?
Says you. Welcome to SoxCast, episode 171. We're the podcast that is neither vegan or cruelty free, especially that second one. How's everybody doing? Y'all feeling good? You ready for a podcast? Are we all primed and pumped? Well, I guess pumped is that's a given at this point, given the starting conversation. I think there's definitely a lot of pumped.
It's fucking shorts weather, Polly.
It really is.
Of course, I'm in good spirits.
It feels great now. Like, we are cruising into a time of year where the world's still falling apart, but hey, you know what? It's shorts weather.
But it's shorts weather.
There you go. I don't wear
everything's
shorts.
Everything's better when it's shorts weather. I just wear shorts. You will never regret wearing shorts.
I just wear skirts everywhere. It's the same thing. It's just skirt. It's just shorts without the burden of each leg needing to be confined.
Honestly, yeah, in some ways, sounds even better.
It is.
You're welcome to the shorts club.
Yeah, I would like to think that I am an honorary member. But you're right. Are you a shorts guy?
Say the line, Pokemon boy. They're comfy and easy to wear. I'm wearing shorts right now, so yeah.
All right.
It's a little warm
today.
That's
what we like to hear. So everybody here, to check it out, everybody, your favorite SoxCast host at this very second, legs out. Let's go. Hashtag legs out. Let's hear it.
Legs out.
Legs out. We're all ready. To my immediate virtual right, when he has a hammer, every baby he sees is a nail. It's red.
Why babies?
What?
Why babies?
Because that's like the most horrifying thing that I could say in that moment.
Truly not cruelty free today.
Yeah. Like I said, I promised you that we were not cruelty free today. So, you know, man, you always got to start with a good old fashioned beating a baby with a hammer joke.
Yeah, it's like
steam.
Back to like fifth grade here. It's great.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Now, children, I could get behind.
Sure. I mean, I don't know. They've got like they can speak.
They made my whole brand that for a few years a while ago.
They can speak. They can be reasoned with. You could give them like you can give them an ice cream and they'll shut up and leave you alone. But babies, they keep being loud and they make noise and that's all they do. And it's just like, you know,
and they do poop
and they poop so much.
So much.
Cats so poop so much, y'all. I didn't know.
Oh, no.
How much cats poop.
Now you're dealing. So now not only are you dealing with the nose problems, but you've got like poop like everywhere.
It's fine. It's fine. They put your poops in the litter box. It's fine.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good.
Very John.
Sweet. Yeah.
I have two indoor cats. And it's also like throwing up season.
Oh no!
Like the hairballs.
Yep.
Oh, I'm just like, oh, if I lived on my own, never.
That's me. That's me every morning right now. Am I like part cat? Because I wake up every morning and I'm like hacking up phlegm balls, and it's just like, you know. Thanks. You know, thankfully we're starting to reach like the end of allergy season, or at least get kind of close to it. Where everything kind of evens out and the pollen levels aren't, you know, fuck your face off with Mother Nature's girl. We went over this last episode, really.
I'm just like, how the fuck is May half over? Every month I'm like, how's the month half over? And then it's...
In some May ways, 7th. That's good. In others, maybe not so good, I guess.
Yeah, it can go either way.
It's definitely like, dude, time is just, again, I know we come back to that a lot. We come back to it a lot because it's something I think we're all just kind of dealing with, in that like time does not make sense anymore. And we don't know if we want it to go faster, if we need it to slow down.
Yeah.
It's just like, dude, I don't No!
The Switch is 8.
Oh my god. That's so crazy to me. Oh god, I can't stop. To my immediate virtual left, he's the only thing that made me stop thinking about the plains of North America. It's John Pyre.
It's me.
It is! It is.
We're going to talk about games.
We are going to talk about games. Would you like to talk about video games for our listening audience, John?
Sure.
All right, I'll let you get right into that then. You just hop right in and open your mouth and let the video games fall out.
Last time on the SoxCast.
1 month ago.
1 month ago, I talked at length about how much I was enjoying Kirby Return to Dream Land. That's right. We're starting with a Nintendo game.
Whoa. A Nintendo game on a SoxMakePeopleSexy.net podcast? What?
From John. But I was like, this rules. It just feels great to play. It's like, it feels like Superstar. They figured it out. Mm. They cracked it. It feels like Superstar, and also just like the stages are really... It just felt good. I was just happy with it. I had a good time. But I hadn't finished it yet. In the last month, I finished it.
Nice.
And then I got 100%. And then I did extra mode. And then we got extra mode 100%. And we cleared both arenas.
What is this
and
game?
We got all gold medals on the challenge.
Oh my god. This is a real bang for your buck game, huh?
Uh-huh. Especially since my buck was free.
Because he's not advocating piracy. He is a member of the media. We are a podcast. We get free things all the time because everybody loves us, especially Nintendo.
They sent me a review code for this Wii game from 2011.
Yeah.
Now I have a question. You got 100%. Did they add more to the Switch version?
They absolutely added more to the Switch version. They added stuff to the Switch version. That sounds pretty good, Rhett. It sounds pretty
up,
good.
Fucked up. You have to 100% it again.
That'll be really fun in like 8 years.
Oh, it's got to be retro.
Yep. I spent 20 fucking hours playing this game. I need some time.
I'm just like, why didn't you start from the Switch? I guess if you didn't know you were going to like it this much.
Because I didn't know I was going to love it so much. And I didn't know how good the Switch exclusive stuff was going to sound.
Shit.
And also, it changes the art and shit. And also, Red, remakes are stupid. And yeah, no one should ever play the Switch version of anything.
You are never going to get John to play a remake when an original is readily available. And the only time that will happen is if he has already played the original. Like, you're not getting him to play the original before a remake. Before the original.
I did do that with Star Ocean, and I definitely regretted it. But also, I'm not sure that I would have enjoyed the SNES version either.
I'm just not sure Star Ocean's all that good.
We looked it over. We thought about it. I don't think there's cracking that nut, Paul. I don't think there's a version of Star Ocean that would be fucking good.
Nope. It's just not. Nope. I'll be if people are going to crucify you for that, I will be there next to you on another cross, because I mostly hate Star Ocean.
Don't play the Switch version, I guess, but I can't vouch for the SNES version either, so we'll see. We won't. I'm probably not going to ever play those again. Played a bunch of Kirby. Played Kirby to fucking death. I beat the arena on my first try because I'm a champion pro gamer. Mm-hmm. True arena is much harder, turns out.
So what makes it so hard?
So you have either you have substantially less healing, like half the healing you have on the regular arena. You only get 3 maximum tomatoes and 3 little tomatoes for all like 14 bosses.
Okay.
So you just have to, and you just do them in a row. They randomize everything except for the final bosses. So you don't, if you're doing it over and over, you don't have to fight the same bosses in the same order every time, which I think is cute.
Which is good, but it's also like, then you can't plan certain abilities.
Exactly.
For certain bosses.
Yep. I played it the slow way, which is just, shooting stars does a lot of damage. I think you can definitely beat the bosses faster with like maybe sword or hammer or whatnot.
Yeah.
But it's just fucking harder. It's hard to figure out how to get those attacks in. They don't deal that much damage. You have to play way more proactively, and it's just a lot easier to just wait, dodge attack, suck up a star, shoot it at them, wait, dodge the attack. Yeah. So it's pretty slow. Like it took like a half hour to do the whole true arena. which took several tries. And I also practiced one part with save states. I finally
I figured out not playing on like hardcore.
Yeah, yeah.
On hardware, I still beat it legit. I just practiced multiple things with saves. It feels weird to use save states on like a Wii game. It's like we can do this. It just works like ZSNES. What?
Oh right.
Yeah, it's got that built-in stuff now.
Yeah, you can just play. I mean, it works like ZSNES in the sense that you just press a hotkey, save a state, and then you press another hotkey, and it just instantly loads.
It feels very weird doing that for more modern consoles.
Exactly. Yeah.
The Wii, a modern console. Mm-hmm. SoxCast 2025.
Absolutely. I never tried it with Xenoblade or Xenoblade X, so I was like, whoa, what? So that did short abbreviate my time with the true arena. It would have
If you had to practice the last boss like five times or more.
Well you can practice almost all the bosses just by going to them in the main game and then going to their boss level.
Does the last boss not change in any way?
I think it's different on the Switch version. The last bosses are the same, but they add a new boss right before it. And it fucking rips. It's a really, really, really good fight. And it was really hard.
Because I played Superstar on DS, which added a true arena. And I think it ends with like a true Marks boss fight. And I got there and was like, I'm fucking done. This is too much.
That's fucking awesome. Yeah, it's the same. I mean, that's the same director as this one.
I think that's kind of where he was getting his teeth on. Let's play. Let's remake Superstar. Figure out what makes this one tick and copy that.
Yeah, but like I kind of like this one more than Superstar. This is kind of my favorite.
Wow!
Like it's just they just nail the storytelling. They have the final boss is really like I talked so much about the True Arena because that's fresh in my brain. Yeah. Final boss is really good. Climax is really good.
Man, Kirby end bosses tend to go I don't know, man. I think like if there is a series that is real consistent with final boss fights, Kirby's definitely got to be it.
It's they've been real consistent on it. The thing with like Kirby Adventure or Marks or Kirby 64 is like you kind of get to the final boss and it's almost like the game is immediately going really hard kind of out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And they're really good, but
maybe a little unearned.
A little unearned is how it feels to me sometimes. It's like I don't think that matters as much with something like Adventure when it's only, you know, a couple hours long. But with something like 64, like I hear people talk it up and I'm like, yes, this rules, but there's a language to this kind of thing where you can make these final bosses hit harder. And I think a big part of that is when you build up to it more. So like Mario 3 Climax, like the game goes really hard for the final world.
It builds up
the whole. The climax isn't just, you know, fighting Bowser. It's everything in that world 8 leading up to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The last two worlds in Return to Dreamland build up to the finale in a really strong way. I think the way I want to put it in a way that's kind of non-spoilery is like, you know, Mega Man 11 or Mega Man 11 when, you know, the double gear, the boss uses the double gear.
Yeah, and it's very cool moment.
Or Sonic Colors when the boss uses the
wisps.
Yeah. That's kind of like the number one card you can play in a lot of games like this is like, oh, you've tied together this big mechanic with the storytelling in a really cute way. And it feels very climactic.
Yeah.
I think what elevates Kirby Return to Dreamland over games like that, 3D World does the same thing too. It rules.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
When fucking Bowser uses the cat power up.
Power up is so good.
It's so good. But also, like, that's it. That's the cool moment. Yeah, and it doesn't really build up to it that much. And it doesn't really have that much follow through.
No gravitas.
Return to Dreamland plays that card at, like, the world five boss. Like, two worlds before the final boss. They go as hard as a normal platformer would go for the finale.
At the end boss, yeah.
Multiple worlds earlier, so that when you get to the final boss, they have to go like several steps past that. Like, okay, we've already introduced the really cool thing. Now we have to develop it even further.
And that's way and more confident to me. That's just like, all right, we're going to push ourselves to go even bigger.
They played their best card, and it made them have to think up new cards.
Yep. I always love that.
Yeah. So that's the, like, Kirby Return to Dream Land is operating on a level that I associate with Kamiya games, with, like, Devil May Cry and Bayonetta and Wonderful 101. Like, it's obviously not going as hard as Wonderful 101, but nothing goes as hard as Wonderful.
nothing is going to go that hard.
This is interesting, because this is what I would kind of thought people said about Planet Robobot. Yeah,
Robobot is definitely
that's
the same
thing. The Gurren Lagann of Kirby games.
Yeah. maybe these other ones are real good, too. All I know is this one sure rules.
Yeah.
If there's a point of criticism, I don't know if I brought this up, but, like, one of the big ideas that they're developing here are the mega weapons, the mega powers, which are kind of contrived because they're basically like throughout the game, there'll be like these one rooms where you get a mega power and then you can cream a bunch of enemies and then it moves on to something else. They're kind of like mega mushrooms in New Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
Which was used like twice.
So it does better than NSMB, but I looked it up and like this game was like in development hell for like several years. And it sounds like they basically hacked it together from like three different prototypes for what the Kirby sequel could be, which is crazy because it feels very cohesive and coherent. Mm. That's that kind of contrived feeling is, I think, the only thing that feels like a relic of.
We had this thing. We did not know what to do with it, but it got crammed in there anyway.
Exactly. And then they use that. Basically, I just think it's a bad idea because it's basically here's Kirby's mega powers. When you use them, it stops the screen and plays a canned animation for like 2 or 3 seconds.
Yeah.
And that's just not that fun.
Yeah.
So I think this was kind of a bad idea they're maybe stuck with. And then they used it in basically as well as they possibly could have. I think I can't imagine playing out this silly idea in a stronger way that also compromises the least amount of the game. So I'm basically like a lot of my arc with this one was just kind of really admiring the way that it evolves through the climactic sequences. It hit me really good.
Yeah.
Some time ago I played a game and was like, I wish Nintendo would make there's no reason Nintendo couldn't make 2 or 3 games this good every year.
Yeah.
And
that would be neat.
And like Return to Dream Land and Metroid Dread and stuff. And a couple others are like, yeah, just, you got it. This is the kind of blockbuster I really like. You're doing good. So I'm just really jazzed for more Kirby. I'm really happy. There's like 4 more of these. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Yeah,
there's probably someone at Nintendo that just fucking groans every time they greenlight a 2D game. They were like, fucking Metroid. No, come on.
No. Oh, let's wait 10 years for Metroid Prime 4, and it's just going to be another Metroid Prime game, which are mostly not that good.
Oof. Shots fired.
Okay. Man, Metroid Prime 1 is still good, but 2 and 3 are very sus.
2 is very sus.
2 is super sus. 3, I don't feel anything for that game. I can't even get like excited to talk about it in any way, good or bad. It's just like, yeah, I played it, and I mean, it was a Metroid Prime game, I guess.
Are you talking about 3 or 2?
3.
Yeah,
it's 3 is real segmented and just doesn't feel right to me. It's just like, whatever.
Talk about contrived power ups, all the hyper stuff that you use to open 2 doors. Stupid fucking game. All right. I haven't replayed it since 2007, so we'll see. But
okay, I will give one point to Metroid Prime 3 is that at the very end, like in the last world, Samus like falls down a huge like tunnel and does like the superhero landing pose at the end, except this was before that was a huge thing.
So she just
landed in an extremely cool way that made such a huge impression on me. I was like, Samus is so fucking cool. Like, I think this was before Iron Man came out.
Isn't that, doesn't she do that at the start of, does she do that at the start of Prime 1
when she jumps out of the ship? She hops out of the ship onto the
it's like poetry. Okay,
that's not nearly like a 2 minute fall.
Yeah.
Okay. No,
yeah. Landing fits down like fucking badass.
Sure, that's sure. That's much cooler, but she does, she is known for very cool poses upon
entering. It probably is a callback though.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Like, cool.
How they started the first game, they're ending the third game with
it. Yeah. That would make total sense.
Look, I think Metroid Prime, when you talk about it as like, here are three games we put out over like 5 years and one console, basically one or two console generations, that's great.
Sure.
As a thing that you build up to for 10 fucking years, and it's just going to be another Metroid Prime game?
Like, when I saw everything, you know, that Metroid Prime 4 currently is, it was just like, this is what you've had me waiting for? This is what you rebooted this stupid idea three times for, is to just kind of show me Metroid Prime in a form that I have seen before with dinkier weapons and bad sound design? Like, is this
I can't believe that original trailer. You will use these psychic powers to open doors. Just, I know people are like, oh, Metroid Prime doesn't show well in trailers. I'm like, you gotta put some exciting stuff in your fucking trailer. Unless they're holding it back for like November.
Metroid Prime doesn't show well in trailers because Metroid Prime mostly is just kind of okay.
Yeah.
It's like building up for 10 years and Naughty Dog is like, finally, Jak and Daxter 4. It's here. You've been waiting so long.
Man,
yeah, I feel forgot. Bad about those games.
I don't think I ever told this story. I was at like the pizza place and I wear Metroid shirts a lot. And the guy there was like, hey, you like Metroid? And I'm like, yeah. He goes, I just played Metroid Prime, like the remaster probably.
Yeah.
And he's like, I've heard it called one of the greatest games of all time. What do you think? And he obviously didn't think it was one of the greatest games of all time.
Isn't that always the weirdest moment when somebody notices your shirt?
What is he accusing? And they're like accusing you?
And I want to talk about the thing, and you don't know. Like, do I engage? How do I engage? It's always like, the most awkward thing.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, geez. I was never like the super fan of Prime, but put on the spot at such moment.
Anytime somebody, because I wear a lot of video game shirts too, and it's led to a lot of cool things where I've met very cool people who I've gone on to have very cool relationships with, and like, oh, hey, like you like cool. Finally, I met somebody in this area that knows what I the Somnium Files is. That's cool. Wow. Somebody recognized my I shirt once, but sometimes it's just like, hey, you like Metroid? Man, I like me some Call of Duty. It's like, well, we got a lot in common, don't we?
Video games.
They're all right.
Yeah.
Kirby's conversations good. Are usually like, oh, Legend of Zelda, what's that? Like,
what?
Come on.
What? What?
What is Kirby? First you draw a circle, then you draw another a couple circles, and I draw a few more, and presto, and a little big smile, and presto, it's Kirby.
Best video game intro ever.
We watched 7 episodes of the Kirby anime. That's how deep I got in.
That's way too much for me.
Played a big chunk of Air Ride too and had fun. But then we looked at, then I was like, okay, so like, is there going to be like a status quo change at some point in this show? It's 100 episodes.
Oh God,
it's 100 episodes.
And then I looked, like, episode 27, DDD comes up with a new monster to try to stop Kirby. And I'm like, okay, we jump episode 53. DD comes up with a new monster to try to stop Kirby. Episode 78, DD comes up with a new monster to try to stop Kirby.
Sonic Prime in 8.
Episode 100, Meta Knight and Kirby go on the Halberd to defeat the Nightmare. And I was like, okay, rewind.
Okay, hold on, wait a sec.
The last 3 episodes, it suddenly like jumps and is like, okay, we gotta go beat the Nightmare on the Halberd. And then like the 4th episode from that is DD comes up with a new monster to try to stop Kirby.
So when you said you watched some episodes, you didn't necessarily watch them sequentially.
No, we did. We watched 7 sequentially. And then I just jumped through like the episode. I didn't watch them. We looked at the Wikipedia summaries.
Oh, you got to watch the last 3 now.
I kind of want to watch the last 3 now. All right. Well, one more thing I wanted to get out quick. fucking Kirby. The True Arena was so good. I beat the last boss with 1 hit to go.
Oh, my God. That's always the best.
35 minutes in, I was sweating real bad, but luckily I practiced that boss quite robustly. The entire like last like 3 minutes of the boss, I had 1 hit to go, and I was just like completely trying to clutch it. There's like a couple attacks where the windows are really tight.
It's like team video games, baby.
Come on. I fucking did it. But I also played Death of a Wish.
Mm-hmm. I can't believe this is getting second fiddle.
Yeah,
I didn't mean for it to get second fiddle. I'm sorry. I really, really like this one. Luca was the game I got really obsessed with.
Yeah.
The first like character action game I got really obsessed with.
Mm-hmm.
It has parries.
Oh, and man.
Before I played all of Dark Souls without figuring out parries.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Fair.
All of Demon Souls without parrying. And then I played Luca and I fucking figured it out and I was parrying everything and it felt really good.
Can I tell a funny Luca story?
Go for it.
And I don't mean it in a bad way. When I say this, I don't mean this in a bad way because I am going to play that game. But like when I fired it up the first time and you get to the first point where you've got to parry something the game explains parrying, it does that thing I hate where all games that have parry systems do is where they introduce parrying with a slow ass enemy with a fucking animation you literally cannot read to parry. The same way Dark Souls does it against like an undead burgs. Hey, parry this enemy that has this really sporadic animation and there's no way you can tell when he's going to swing. And I literally quit playing Luca at that moment.
Oh, I wonder what it was there.
That was literally the moment I quit. It was like, here, parry this slow moving enemy that telegraphs its attack in this very slow labored manner. And it's like, oh, get out of here. Learn to tutorialize your game and I will come back.
Where you don't know where the game intends for you to do the enemy.
You don't know where the window is. So it's like, that's bad design. I'm sorry. That is a terrible way to design teaching the player a vital mechanic like parrying.
Hey, it's still a lot fucking clearer than Revengeance.
I mean, I don't know. I picked up Revengeance real fast.
I sure didn't. I didn't pick it up until I got to the boss that was like, you have to parry or you'll die. And then I looked it up and people explained, oh, you flick the stick in the specific direction. And I was like, oh, I didn't pick that up at all.
Maybe like it was differently tutorialized when I played it, but
it was
like,
badly tutorialized.
I just remember thinking, okay, here's an enemy. He's got a flashy red thing. I press the button. I flick the stick in the direction he's at. I parry. Okay.
All right. Pro gamer, Polly.
I am a pro gamer. That is something we have to keep in mind is that I am a professional video gamer person.
All right. So I played Luca to death. I got the true end. I did the gauntlet DLC, which was really hard. And then I put it down. And then like 6 years later, big sequel, big sequel. It wasn't just 6 years of dev. Like they've been working kind of between this and another
they
big
had
project.
Another thing going
a ways
on.
Along.
Yeah.
It looks like an RPG.
It's
thing.
An RPG.
I'm really excited.
Yeah.
I want to do kind of summarize some of the big changes here. The big one is that in Luca, when you parry an enemy, they break instantly and then you can deal a bunch of damage.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of like an optimal, a good way of playing Luca for me, at least maybe not at a super high level, is to just park next to the enemy, learn when to parry, wait for them to attack and then parry, break, smash, they're dead.
Yeah, like that's how I was intending to play that game. Yes.
Yeah. So it's kind of reactive. And sometimes a little slow.
A little more defensive. You can't be super aggressive.
Chris in Death of Wish, he doesn't have a stamina meter. He can do whatever he wants as long as he wants. B, enemies don't insta-break on parry anymore. Mm. They take guard damage, which I think recovers over time. So you have to parry them like three times. I think the window is a bit larger, but the idea is they also take a lot of guard damage from like getting hit with combos. So now, in order to break an enemy and deal the big damage, you need to get up in their face. You need to smack them until they do their attack and then do a parry. And then sometimes they'll be like Chun-Li, Street Fighter 3, doing multiple attacks in a row. And you can get the timing to do parry, 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 and then they break. And it feels really fucking good.
You can have your own Daigo moment.
Yep. It's a game full of Daigo moments. And getting those breaks feels so good. And also, it just encourages you to play the game in a much more aggressive, scrappy way.
That's kind of like what I wanted to hear. Is that like, I can't really deal with games that want me to sit around and block and then parry. And just because it makes me feel like, well, what's the point of me having attacks? Like I'm never the one that can go on the aggressive because it doesn't really benefit me to do so.
I think you can play Luka that way. I just didn't. I got the big sword build. And
right.
I could just hack into them with a bunch of damage, but it was very dangerous to try to get off a little attack because, again, I was using like this Viander.
Yeah.
I think you two would be interested in Sekiro because that was the thing I could never mesh with in that game is that it wanted you to attack and parry together.
Yeah.
Like to just never let up on any.
Being aggressive or I like being allowed to be aggressive. It doesn't have to be. This is required, but I like it when a game welcomes me being aggressive and like the enemies are designed around that and not just me waiting for them to bait out an attack and then go on the offensive.
Mm-hmm. And one of the ways in which Death of Wish is in some ways better than Kirby Return to Dreamland.
Finally.
Does Kirby have berries?
That was a game I played very passively where I was like, all right, let's dodge. All right, window, shoot. Okay. So that's really nice. There's only one loop this time. I think that's classy. Mm-hmm. And it, in general, it's just a little bit, the levels are bigger, but there's less downtime. There's less quiet part. There's fewer, like, there's still quiet parts. It's still very moody.
Yeah.
Like the best part about Luka is that it's a Devil May Cry beat 'em up, but it's also like a really good edgy queer Twine game.
Yeah.
And that they preserve that. But they kind of like, there's like one big text interlude this time instead of like a bunch of them. And it just landed really good for me. It has a really cathartic finale. It has some really good chunky boss fights and the little mechanical changes worked really well for me. They generally tightened up how the corruption meter works here, I think. So it's a little bit clearer and more, scary, I think, than it was in Luka. Cause they both games do like a Dragon Quarter D meter. But I like how it works in Luka a little more. One thing is that you can kind of grind down the corruption in this one. And I was kind of tempted to do that for a little while at the start when I stopped and just let my corruption go up as in time with however I was playing. The game did not punish me for that. I feel that it's probably faster to just try to play really well and take your L's when you get them, than it is to, try to grind down the corruption and keep it down. Cause it doesn't make you, it doesn't make you start over from the beginning the second you hit 100. Like that's kind of a spoiler, but like it does not do that. So it's just a really good package. Like it's like I finished Luka feeling like there were a couple of threads I wanted a little more development on, and this just finishes up those threads in a really beautiful, clean way. And it's just wild to play like two like very big action games from an indie dev where like they complete this very large story with a lot of characters and moving parts and ideas. And between the two games, they're both very, very fun to play and they bring you on that whole arc and it's really satisfying. Like I think they just accomplished something super cool that's also really rare in like in any game space.
Cool.
So I was very pleased with Death of a Wish. I'm really glad I got around to it after literally a year.
Nice.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised when you didn't pick this up like the day it came out.
Yeah. This was definitely
dude, you were obsessed with Luca for a while.
Yeah.
I really liked it.
Was Luca a game of the year, or did it get beat by like Zero Ranger or something?
I think it was like three or four. Yeah. I think that was the same year as Zero Ranger and Fate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a big
of all years. Year.
I think I put it over Hollow Knight.
Yeah, it's a game like it's like you, listen fair. To this banner list, man.
Yeah.
I know when Fate wasn't number one, that was a big enough shock.
Fuck, that was yeah, I think God, that was
the year of hyperfixations, if they were all, if that was all at the same time.
Hey, if anything was gonna be Fate, it was Zero Ranger.
Easy.
All right, that's my chunk.
Cool.
How about Polly goes next?
Yeah. Right.
I can do that. I've come prepared. I can talk. Microphone, everything. Look at me go. It's like I've been doing this for a while. I know a thing or two about making a podcast. About
gaming.
Move forward. Gaming. Speaking of gaming, I started a new project where it's a bit of an archival project because we talked a lot about game dev the last time. And I released a game, Yomu Yomu Ball, and people liked it. It was fun, cute little thing.
And then Toad broke it.
And then Toad literally just kind of went ham on it, and still the only person to have broken 1,000 on that.
I'm shocked, really.
I really am. Like, most people seem to top out at around 300 or 400. So Toad has kind of carried that flag. It's just like, man, like when Nunlock came out and Ballas was just like, oh, hey, I'm going to play it with two hands like a goddamn wizard. Yeah. It's like, oh, I never thought of that. But after I finished that game, like we had like just a whole bunch of shit kind of started happening around the idea of like we need to preserve our stuff. I just got this wild hair up my ass and decided I'm gonna write a whole goddamn website about every game I've ever made, and I'm going to include like in development builds, I'm going to include full commentary on how the game was made, I'm going to include like behind the scenes stuff, full downloads for everything. And I kind of just did, I wrote an entire website about my entire game dev history, and it's nothing small either. Like, these ended up being kind of real chunky write-up. There's still a number of real chunky really ones left. And I finished writing this entire website in like 4 days and putting it all together. That's how like I was just into doing this that I was. And I've been doing like soft launches for all of my games again with all of this new content and kind of like, you know, unveiling the site one game at a time to kind of let everything have 24 hours or so to breathe. Mm-hmm. And that's been really, really fun. I think I'm not somebody that takes a lot of pride in my work. You can blame that on being beaten down as a child and being told nothing you do is good. Stop being excited about it. It turns out that might traumatize a child and permeate into their adulthood. But I was able to kind of gain more of an appreciation for this body of work that I've made for 10 years that is like, you know what? Yeah, like this is all very uniquely me. And I think the thing that sealed that for me was when Yomu Yomu Ball came out, somebody sent me a message. It was just like, if nobody told me you made this and your name was nowhere on it, I would still know you made this. And it was like, okay.
Aww, now that's such a good feeling.
That was such an amazing feeling because it's just like, that's something I always just like, am I even making anything interesting? Like, I make simple little things that just feel very minor and silly in the grand scheme of, well, you know, what people tend to consider making an indie game these days, whatever that's, you know, I am the unwashed unprofessional in the room when it comes to making video games, and I'm ruining the games culture apparently, but
indie covers such a large space from like Hades 2 to
like
Rika Simulator.
So like doing all of that in that little archival project, there's still like a couple of weeks left on it. We've got.
I just went to the site to look at what's upcoming, and one of them is makes me very happy.
Oh yeah,
which one? On the 26th, I think.
The 26th. Oh, okay. Yeah, I know. I've kind of looked at this and was like, yeah, okay.
Oh, it's very good. It's two spots.
Yeah, it's two spots. It's got so, yeah, but having done all this, it's just felt kind of nice to kind of look back at, like, to finally actually sit down and look back at everything and also just be providing all of this stuff that I like seeing. Like, oh, like, yeah, here's these, like, this very early build that Poly Dungeon that Rhett sent to me that was this bare-bones skeleton of an idea. And I just draped everything on top of that. All of that code is still there in Flash 4. I just made it pretty.
I just realized something, though. I feel like we're at the point where you can't say something was made in Flash 4 and have a lot of people understand what that means.
Yeah, they don't understand what that means anymore.
Because Flash has been dead for so long.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, this is definitely a time capsule, and it dates all of us that are involved. Yeah. But yeah, this is a fun project. There's still a couple of weeks. That's just at socksmakepeoplesexy.net/games if you want to read all that.
It's a really gorgeous site. I found the first build of her lullaby you sent me.
Yes! We actually were able to preserve the very first, like, the chunk that I sent to John was just like, here, John, just write something. Help me get this going. And then, so we have that preserved now. So, cool. Like, I like having all of this stuff, and I like having, you know, like, who created what? I like having all of that stuff be there and easy to find, so... Yeah, like, I'm just very proud of this site, and I'm happy how it all came together. And I'm glad that people seem to be enjoying this little behind-the-scenes look at stuff, because I'm no great game developer or a fantastic coder or anything, but I think that the stuff that I've been able to, like, preserve and put in here and share with people, like the scrambled edition of Luigi floating on an egg over the sea, nobody knew that existed.
I did. Okay, I was like, did anybody know about this?
Nobody knew about that. I was developing that in private, and I just never got back to it. But I liked it, and I thought, like, I thought I lost it, but I actually found it, like, a couple of nights before that piece went up, and I was able to include it and include that part in the write-up.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so just having
my favorite my favorite line in the commentary so far is in an afterword. Uh-huh. Where you have Polly's whole big loving write-up, and then John just starts with, Polly's being generous with her description above. I really whiffed it here.
Yeah, I played really nice in how that little afterward story turned out.
not in ways reflected in the final game.
Okay, but just the first line, I started laughing before I got to that.
Yeah, it's real good. But yeah, socksmakepeoplesexy.net/games. There's, like I said, there's still about 8 or 9 days left. I'm taking weekends off to kind of let things gel, so things will be starting back up on the 19th. So yeah, good stuff. I'm having a lot of fun with this going out, and people seem to be enjoying it. So there's that. Any questions or thoughts on that?
I think it rules. I think it's very pretty. I think you're doing a good job.
Yeah, it's nice and I want it nice and simple. I didn't want to, like, do anything like using the site, you know. I was like, just raw dog ass HTML, dude.
Oh, we're raw dogging again,
raw dogging again. Yeah. Just like, hey man, when you select a pope, you gotta raw dog it. They're raw dogging it in there.
What more do you fucking need than HTML and CSS?
That's all, baby.
All my websites are just made from
that's opening and text file.
Notepad.
Polly, if you want, I can show you how to make the text look good on mobile.
Okay. Yeah, if you want to fart around with that, I'll just give you access. I don't
know. It's not hard.
Okay, cool. So, there's that. So... I know that what we're going to be going into next is like, Rhett's got him a big chunker of a segment coming up. And that got me thinking, it's like, well, man, Saga. Everybody's got a Saga. John, first 2 damn years of this damn podcast, Saga. And Rhett's always going on Sagas. When's my Saga? When do I get one? It's my turn. It's my Saga now, okay? I mean, I guess I did have a Mary Skelter Saga.
That
lasted a number of years. It had a very good ending, but
can I make a quick joke?
Sure.
We were getting overwhelmed by a lot of the media things we had going, and I was like, I like planted my hands on the table and said, Cecile, we need a no era. we're going to play Kirby, and then we're going to play something completely different, and then we're going to watch a movie, and we're going to watch an anime, and we're going to just jump around and not have an
era.
This is our no era era.
We are not hyperfixating.
We are not hyperfixating
into the Kirby era.
I'm not in a Kirby era. I finished totally one Kirby game, and now we're like doing
30 hours.
Yeah, it was 20 hours, and yeah,
Kirby and ended up being a big game. That's the funny
spread
part.
Out over a spread out over a month.
Yeah, like we're still. I think that's kind of a mini saga. Like,
yeah.
If you were talking about something that not would count era. As basically two podcasts in a row, and it's a month, I think that's a saga.
No, fucking. It's not an era. Okay.
It's not an era. It's a saga.
It's not an era.
I won't call it an era because it literally was one game. I think to be an era, you've got to be taking in multiple things. And though the anime, I think, puts you on thin ice for being an era.
Yeah.
We only watched 7 episodes. That's not that
still,
much.
Still, John. John, you are in dangerous. You are on a dangerous slope. You are headed toward era.
Robobot. Oh, and he played Air Ride. I don't know.
Wait.
Era doesn't even have a story mode. No, you just like jump in and
I
do
forgot
time
about Air Ride. I forgot about Air Ride. John, it's an
I played
era.
For like 5 hours.
It's an era. It's an era. Sorry, John.
No.
All and in also, favor of it being an era, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Red Triple Deluxe Cabin is before Robobot. I'm not jumping straight to Robobot. I'm going to play them in order because guess what? Triple Deluxe is probably going to be just also really good.
Anyway.
I'm definitely the jump to the best one guy.
I'm not convinced. The thing is, Red, people are full of shit and they don't know what's good or not. Where I might get to Robobot and be like, oh, Return to Dreamland was better. And I wouldn't have known that if I jumped to the one that fucking randos told me was the best one. All right, continue, Polly.
All right. So anyway, like after I finished writing that website, I was just like, I got this urge. I was like, all right, I have not sat down and played me a long ass chonky video game in a long time. My video game year has been full of a lot of very small things. So I have not had a big chonky boy to kind of sit down and sink my teeth into in a while. And for some reason, I don't know why this game popped out at me. It just like, hey, I'm the one. And I was just like, you know what? You are. We'll just do it. Let's just fucking do it. So I started playing Metaphor ReFantazio.
Oh boy. That's a big one. That's a chonker.
That's your big old Atlas chonky boy. This is like what people were jokingly calling Persona 6.
Almost just said that anyways.
It's the first thing that comes to mind, right? So Metaphor ReFantazio, it's the new big Atlas thing. We'll just kind of jump in here. So this game... It's the story starts where you see the king of the country immediately just getting shanked. There's no mystery to it. It's just like, chonk, king's freaking dead, and here's the guy that did it. It's like, all right, well, we know what we're doing. So you are the member of a resistance who happened to be aligned with the prince, who is obviously king's son. That's how that lineage thing works. And that prince, who now has like a legitimate claim to the throne since the king is dead. However, a number of years earlier, there was actually an attempt on the prince's life that left him cursed. And he is unconscious, and he has, like, thorns growing out of him, and you are a part of this resistance that has kept him hidden, even though everybody in the kingdom had thought him dead. So the only way to break the curse is to kill the person who placed the curse on him, which your group largely believes to be the fuckhead who just killed the king.
Sir Fuckhead.
He is a magnanimous fuckhead. He is just brilliantly fuckheaded. He's
excellent.
Yeah. He's like, man, I love me some social Darwinism. It's great. So like the first 6 or so hours of the game is you and your companions on this mission to go assassinate a dude. And you're going to do it.
That's how you start.
Yeah, you're going to do it at the funeral for the king in grand freaking fashion, too. Like, you're making, like, no bones about, like we're not hiding what we're doing.
We're the Phantom Assassins.
So as you might expect, things kind of don't go as planned, and this plan frickin' fails. Utterly. And it turns out that the now dead king actually had kind of a magical failsafe plan for if he died, that would hoist the royal palace into the sky. And the only way for a king to be decided would be this very long process that is decided by the people. Huh. Sounds so we're trying to turn a monarchy into something. Something awkward.
Oh.
So, yeah, I'm obviously trying to simplify it a bit because this is actually, there actually is a lot of, like, meat to this story's bone, but I would probably eat through 30 minutes trying to kind of go over the complexities. Yeah. But basically, the game is trying to handle a lot of very heady and heavy topics, I think. It is a story about discrimination and racism. They are just right at the middle of this story because the game features a whole loads of tribes with, like, varying physical appearances and cultures. And there's, like, this obvious pecking order. Can you guess who's at the top? Yes, it's the pretty white people. The big bad monsters in the game are referred to as humans. If that's any hint as to what this game may be going for. And the humans are interesting because they are just these big, ugly monsters, and they are visually designed around the artistic works of Hieronymus Bosch, who is an artist that I've actually been getting into over, like, the last year or so. I've just kind of been appreciating his art. A lot of his work appears just very directly in the game as, like, the big stomping, hulking, scary enemies that everybody's afraid of. Like, if you look up The Garden of Earthly Delights is probably, like, the most famous work. A lot of this game uses works from that painting, and it's just very surrealist. It's very surrealist. They're very clearly, like, visually theming it to tie to everything, and I really, really like it. But seeing as that this is Atlas telling a story about racism, I'm really hoping we don't end up with, like, brand new animal racism, where where brand new animal solution was, yes, look, it's obviously bad to discriminate against people because they're different than us. But the people different from us are obviously savage animals who do need to be separated from us. It's like Trigger. Yes, you took a hard swing there, man. And oh my god. And also, given the game's name, fantasy is obviously, like, a big thing that they're tying to the game, because your character carries around this mysterious book of unknown origin, but it's a book about a utopia where there's no discrimination, resources are, like, shared among the people, elections exist, politicians are held accountable, you know, like, complete fantasy.
Yeah, fantasy.
So I think that, like, this game is trying to kind of dig into some really good societal commentary, and, like, I'm, like, sitting here just like,
yeah, that's,
and it's
scary.
Atlas that has to be the one to deliver it.
Yeah, so
they've not, like, dropped the ball before or anything.
When I started hearing, like, what they were doing at this one, I was like, I'm gonna wait to hear how other folks I trust respond to this one.
It's like, I obviously want them to nail this because I think that, like, this is obviously a story for now. Like, in the ways that Xenoblade 3 is a story that is angry about where our world is at, this game is presenting that same thing on that same level and maybe even a little higher, given its prestige of being the Persona team doing this. And it's like, yes, this is a story I think that needs to exist right now, especially for a lot of shitheads that are probably going to play this game, you know? So, I want them to go through with it. Like, I am only 12 hours into what is probably a 100 hour RPG. I think I'm like 15 hours after today. But so like I can say right now, I think they're on a good path. I think they've got their groundwork set. The tone is a little different than I expected because coming from the Persona team, like you would kind of expect there to be like some level of levity to things, but this story has been very straightforward and straight laced with its theming and it's trying to do that to make sure that these themes are seen as serious. Like, we're being serious about this. I didn't see the first joke cracked in this game until, like, the 10 to 12 hour mark. That's how, like, self-serious this game is. It's really shocking. So I think for that stuff right now, I see a lot of really good setup. I see a lot of characters I'm really enjoying. I think the dub is incredible. Holy crap. Like, they are just knocking it out of the park with characters that need to sound like they're from freaking, Middle European country. Like, oh, yeah, you all definitely are nailing this, you know. So, in terms of all that, it's doing it. So it takes about 6 hours to get through that prologue. I don't know how familiar others are with like Persona prologues, but like some of us lived through the Persona 4 prologue that is like 3 to 4 hours before you start doing the Persona stuff. This game takes 6 hours to get there. But I think that in the time they've spent making these games, they know how to get to the good stuff a lot faster. Even though you're not doing the Persona thing for a while, the day-to-day stuff, you know, like all of the social linking and all that. It takes, but like, they've constantly got you moving forward. Like, the story is very propulsive in that 6 hours and not just sitting around talking heads for, much like Persona 3 and 4 can be. And as for the gameplay, this game is kind of just like a greatest hits of like modern Shin Megami Tensei and Persona stuff. Like the combat uses Shin Megami Tensei's press turn system and not the one more system from Persona, because I think the one more system, I think, is just kind of, I think it just makes games too easy at this point, where, you attack an enemy, it gets knocked down, and then you can just keep doing that and knock all the other enemies down and then do an all out attack. And everybody dies. This game where you just like, okay, you just get like more, you get a half a turn for every weakness that you hit or every critical you hit. Or if you whiff attack, you whiff an attack, you lose 2 turns. So it's taking that. There's obviously social links. The archetypes, which are the job classes that you can get and equip and all have abilities, they function pretty much like personas from Persona 1 and 2 and the Digital Devil Saga series, with how they learn abilities and stuff. That's just to say, like, if you didn't really like Persona, this probably isn't going to change your mind from a gameplay standpoint, but if the only thing standing in your way was, I want these gameplay systems in a medieval setting that's very self-serious. Hey, guess what? I got a game that might just be for you.
Interesting.
And I think that they just kind of keep tightening up this formula in ways that make a lot of sense, where like they've taken a lot of shots at this point through like the 18,000 versions of Persona 4 and 5 they did. So you now have like a system where everything feels like all of the systems genuinely feed well into the adjacent systems in a really satisfying way. So like the social links now, like they're directly how you get new job classes. And if you do your social links, it also enhances and unlocks new abilities for every class. So it feels more satisfying to do those things. It's the most satisfying that the social link systems have ever felt. My only question is like, okay, so the social links have always felt compartmentalized from the main story. However, like that character growth you see in social links, you rarely ever see that carry over to the actual story. So I'm wondering if that's still going to feel that way, or if they're going to try and make some kind of pivot to make that work. But at like 15 hours in, I think this game's pretty good so far. And that's from somebody who really just does not like fantasy settings. Like, everybody can tell you, I am the first one to just bail on something like that just because I don't like the setting.
But even though the fairy is very cute.
The fairy, Galica is so cool.
The fairy is so cute.
I like Galica because I went into this thinking Galica was going to kind of be annoying. Just because Shin Megami Tensei 5 has that character that follows you around and is kind of freaking annoying. And it's like, I just thought that she was going to be that again. But no, Galica is just a bro. Calic is just like, is super chill. It's just like, she's not like hyper protective of you or some secretly in love with you or anything or sniping at other girls who get close to you. Like, I thought that was going to be Galica's whole deal. But no, she's just super chill. She is just a bro. She's just like, dog, I got your back if you got mine. Like, we're going to do this. We're going to assassinate this fucker. It's going to be great. I like me a fairy that is all on board a good assassination. What can I say? What can I say? There's no return from 86, you know? But yeah, Metaphor seems pretty good so far. Like, I don't know why I keep coming back to these games. I guess there's just a comfort to them. Because I played Persona 3... Reload last year, and that made my game of the year list, obviously, and yeah. I mean, obviously, like, there's some kind of comfort here that I like. There's something here that always gets its claws into me in a way that it's just like, I don't know how they do it. Don't know how they do it. I'll still never play Persona 5 Royal, though, so don't worry about that. Like, I think...
I mean, you played the original, right?
Yeah, I played Persona 5. Like, I think Persona 5 is the best version of Persona 5. Even though I think Persona 5 is kind of crappy in a lot of ways, I think Persona 5 original is just way better than any other version they've done.
Interesting. I mean, my understanding is that you have to play like 80 hours to get to the Royal stuff anyways.
Yeah.
So like, why would you ever replay that again? That's just too much.
I'm also the same when it comes to Persona 4 in that I think Golden sucks shit. And I think the original is just way better. I think that, like, Atlus has a tendency, anytime they, like, they make a game and it hits, they then go release a crappy version that removes all the teeth, that just, like, makes it the most casual, like, it just tilts everything into the player's favor. They just take away every bit of difficulty. And that's why I don't like Golden. I'll never play Royal.
So you're talking, like, difficulty balancing is why they're worse?
Not only that, but they just do, like they just add so much stuff that feels unnecessary. It's like, you're taking this story where you already said the thing that you wanted to say, and now you're going to try and hammer it home even more, but you always do it in the most ham-fisted crap ways, and it's just like Persona 5 Royal's extra stuff is so bad.
So you know what it is.
I know what I've watched people stream it.
Okay,
like I watched a Flat Cap stream all of the Royal stuff, and I was like, this all is bad. and I've seen people stream the Persona 4 Golden stuff too, and it was just nope, this is bad. This is all, not only did you just make the game super easier just so people wouldn't cry about the couple of little moments of friction that the original game offered. and that's probably what will happen to this game at some point, too. So I'm playing this now so that, you know,
before it's ruined.
Yeah, before they go back and ruin it.
Did they do that with SMT5 yet?
Yes. But okay. But from what I understand, the stuff they added to SMT5 was actually good. They added what equates to like a whole second fucking game to that.
Cool.
And it's like a whole different storyline that you can go down in addition to the original that sounds really good. I've not played that game to completion, but I've played like the first 10 or so hours on Switch, and I hated the performance. It was so bad. And I'm like, I will play the Vengeance version at some point. But anyway, I'm done monologuing about a game nobody cares about or wants to talk about.
I think they're not doing a new version of this, but I could totally see them doing Metaphor Re-Fantasio.
Sure. I'm waiting for Persona 3 Re-Reload, where they actually add the female main character now, just to try to make everybody buy it again, and it'll be $70
again. They did do the answer, right?
They did do the answer!
Okay, that's... I'm like, okay, you can stop there.
Yeah, like, and I they will probably sucker me into buying that DLC because I like the answer. So
they probably nerf the difficulty.
It doesn't seem like they nerfed it that much. I think they only made one substantial change that...
You can control the party members, right?
Well, you can control the party members and you have access to your Persona compendium from the main game.
Yeah, it's that thing.
I see.
Like, you that can is a big thing, but game. You do not have to engage with that if you don't want to.
Cool.
The... Every screenshot you share from this, everyone is so pretty. Everyone is so pretty.
Oh, it's such a pretty game. Like, they are on, like, that team knows what they're doing at this point. Like, yeah, like, they're just, yeah, like, the Persona team has game style locked down. Like, as much as I want to begrudgingly compliment them, I was like, yeah, God. Like, that shit is just my jam. Show me a pretty fucking UI that's all animated and things spinning around and flying out at me. Sure, you got me. I'm a UI whore.
Persona 5, they realize, oh, the UI is like all that matters to selling these games.
Yeah, like Persona 3 Reloads has got like this really awesome water theming to it that looks gorgeous. Anyway, that's Metaphor.
I really hope they land the story stuff.
I want them to land it so bad.
Because, boy, that's going to be ugly.
If you fuck up a story that's as easy as racism bad.
Yeah.
Like, come on! Like I said, the bar is literally brand new animal. You can do better than maybe the racism is a little okay, though.
They're just inherently violent.
And they're just inherently violent! Rats!
So freaking funny.
Oh my God, I thought you were going to be like the small segment chaser.
I'm sorry.
Before me.
Just go, man! Fine, let it go! Fine.
Okay, I've just had an interesting last 12 hours.
Oh, jeez. 12 hours? The last 12 hours? Let's fucking go. You up? Let's go.
Made the rookie. I was all confident to talk about this on the podcast. Now I'm like, maybe not. Anyways, got home from work last night. I work night shift, so I get home at midnight, and that's normal for me. Mm-hmm. Made the rookie mistake of fucking with the Koikatsu install.
Oh, no.
Had a card, wasn't loading properly. I was like, okay, I haven't updated Better Repack in like 3 years. Oh, no. I'm on like version 14. They're on version 22 now. And like the patchers are like to upgrade one step at a time.
Oh, God.
So I go to the next version. I'm like, okay, let's see how this goes. And I'm like, whoa, the frame rate is way better now. Uh-huh. I should have done this ages ago. And then I open the game and realize, oh, right. You have to launch as an administrator for anything to load.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's why. Okay, that's why it loaded super quickly. Okay, launch as administrator. Wait, the frame rate is still really, really good now. What's going on? Oh, it's still not loading like all these other mods. It disabled those for now. Let's just spend the next 5 hours trying to figure out how to get everything to work together and failing.
God. Man, that's a real boner killer, isn't it?
Oh, no.
So I was just losing my mind last night because eventually I found out that the original card that wasn't loading is like developed using like this entirely separate mod branch I've never heard of. And just is completely incompatible. With all the mods that like everyone else uses. Everyone has developed as on this one branch, and then so just to see it, I tried it and was on this other mod branch, and it was just like, oh, like the menu, they just redid the menus entirely. I'm just like, this is like Koikatsu nightmare mode. It's like, okay, I loaded it, can I save it? Nope, there's just no salvaging, just like entirely different structure of how the clothes work. It's like, oh man, it's wasted hours, because by
five
the end
hours
I was just
of your life thinking you'd botched your Koikatsu somehow.
God.
And trying to get the frame rate better, and then Googling and being like, oh yeah, K-Plug specifically tanks the frame rate. But I'm like, that's the most important mod in VR. I actually will take that over frame rate, which is crazy. That's how important it is.
Which mod is that?
K-Plug. It's basically the big overhaul for how the VR functions, because it was made by a person and not like a lunatic.
Yeah.
Because the default VR controls are crazy. Mm-hmm. So it's like, this is just essential. There was just no going back to how it functioned before. But just to be at like 6 a.m. and just being like, revert all changes. Please just go back to how it was.
Oh, God. It's like you're doing a Red Linux install.
Oh my god, I've got like three installs. What's more
stressful, Red trying to install Linux or fucking around with Koi Katsu?
Probably this, because I've got one install backed up on the external hard drive, which I had to pull files from one point because I fucked up.
Oh, oops.
Oh, man.
I've got like a ton of stuff on the desktop is like, hey, don't delete these just in case. I'm just like, okay.
Man, I'm just sitting here. Like, the people that don't know what Koi Katsu is or what you're using it for right now,
they're so game of the year lost. Podcast.
But it is the game of the year. Don't worry.
It is a game held together by prayers and duct tape, and I went and fucked with it.
And not in the way you're supposed to fuck with it.
So anyways, that was my evening where was like, I'm going to finish one of the games I'm playing, I'm going to watch a little television, then I'm going to get back to another game. Nope, I'm just going to do this for fucking 5 hours.
I'm going to sit here and fix my boner machine.
To go in a circle and not even just complete failure. Anyways, and then I go to bed and I have such a deep sleep that I have a dream that was so realistic that I was like preparing to talk about it on the Soxcast because I thought it was real.
Uh-huh. Incredible.
And when I woke up, I go, oh, that all was a dream. The whole part where I was planning my Soxcast segment was also a dream. So in this dream, Magic Garden, the game from UFO 50, we found out that that was actually a sequel to an actual 80s game called Magic Garden.
Uh-huh.
That was a 3D platformer, way ahead of its time. I just wanted to mention that.
This is the Soxcast from the Black Lodge.
What a night you had. Jesus Christ. You are not wrong. The last 24 right hours have not been kind to you.
It was interesting. This, just waking up and truly realizing, oh, there is no like lost 80s Magic Garden sequel.
Aww.
Sad. Truly believed it though.
Right.
So then I get up, open a stream. It's a game called Yakuza in Hawaii Pirates. And I'm like, oh, I can watch the stream now because I finished the game.
Mm-hmm.
10 seconds later, realization. I finished this game since the last Soxcast. I have a sec. I wasn't going to talk about this game because I kind of forgot about it.
Oh, that's
what happens when you go a month without these.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I've got two games to talk about now. So, whatever the... Like a Dragon, Yakuza Pirate in Hawaii, I think that's the name.
Yeah.
I played that. That was my chaser to cyberpunk.
Yeah.
Whew. It's a big one.
I mean, it's a Yakuza game. I've played so many of those, and I don't really get bored of that. I did actually really like this one. It's just, maybe it didn't leave much of an impression, I guess, when I just kind of forgot.
Like, if you literally forgot about playing it, which I, it's hard for me to usually forget that I played a game unless I just left no impression.
I will say it was right after, you know, the other story that I just told where just waking up in a daze of like one of the deepest sleeps I've had dreaming about this Magic Garden prototype and then being like, oh, but yeah, I had kind of forgotten that I had a second game to talk about. This game got me through an interesting time where a couple weeks ago, Hololive was blowing up.
Oh, God.
And I just wanted the biggest, dumbest Yakuza game possible, and it, with open arms, it was there for me.
Yeah. Yeah, this game looks brilliantly stupid.
It just, it's interesting because it went through several phases where there was one day where it's like, I just want to do side quests. I'm just going to go to the Hawaii map from Yakuza 8 and just do every single mini game and every single side quest. Mm-hmm. Cause this was like a day after, you know, graduation's happened. Or maybe it was like right before. I think it was like the Saturday before. And I'm just like, I don't feel so good, Mr. Stark. I am turning to dust here.
Give me the most tedious thing you can imagine and let me do it for 12 hours.
Mume graduates tomorrow. Ugh. Put the guillotine down. I think so. Like, it's weird that a different Japanese action RPG did a pirate game last year as well.
Sure.
With Ease 10.
Yeah.
The boat combat in this does not feel as good as Ease, which kind of surprised me a bit at first. And I thought, of course you're not going to beat Falcom at the action part of a game.
Sure. Yeah.
That's just kind of obvious. It's interesting, though, because in Ease 10, the boat combat starts extremely slow and heavy.
Yeah.
And then by the end, you were just zipping around like a fucking, I don't know, like a jet on water. You're strafing, you're, you know, spinning around enemies. You're just like lightning on the water. Mm-hmm. And in this, you start heavy and slow, and you kind of finish heavy and slow. Like, people were kind of confused, like, this is the one element where you went for a semi-realism. I feel like it would have been more interesting if they were just like, hey, by the end you have like triple boost.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's still fun. It's just very odd timing that like I played a different Japanese pirate game.
Yeah, like, that's the
7 months ago.
Yeah, the timing.
It's is just perfect. Incredibly weird timing. Especially because the English, like, this was, I think, a simultaneous release, and Ease, you know, took longer to get localized, which put them really close together.
Yeah.
The pirate stuff, for the most part, it's like an entirely separate sub-game from the main story, which is how Yakuza tends to do things. And it does eventually come up in the main story, but, like, the big, there's, like, it's so weird, there's, like, the main plot threads, and then there's a whole separate, like, pirate storyline that gets introduced 6 hours in. And then that one, you're going to different islands and, like, taking on the five captains. It's, if you've played a Yakuza game, they do things the same every single time.
Yeah.
Like, it's always like, they got the formula down so bad. It's just funny, though. Because in Yakuza 8, there's a Pokemon minigame, and it's like, you've got to beat my four captains. Their names are Ace, King, Queen, Joker, and Jack. Yeah. And in this, it's like, here are my five captains. Captain, oh my god, it's like Ninja Pirate, Yakuza Pirate, like Thief Pirate, like they're all just really silly. And I realized,
Dan Riker hearing about Thief Pirate, thief, like, whoa, combining a pirate and a thief?
That's not a real one. I couldn't think of another one.
That's okay. Real good,
but the ninja one absolutely is real, because I realized towards the end, I go, did they make this whole game as a ninja versus pirate joke?
Right. That's where my mind went, like, when I first heard of it.
Because that is a huge portion of this side thing, is fighting a bunch of ninjas as pirates. It's very, very silly. So, like, I had a day where I just did all the side quests. I had a day where I did all the pirate stuff. I had a day where I did, like, most of the main story. Like, it does a good job of not being repetitive, because you're kind of switching gears. Like, there's just a lot of game in here. Mm-hmm. And then there's also one of the weirdest big side quests they've ever done, called the Minato Girls, where they hired like five real girls to be models in the game. The culmination of that side quest is like a half an hour FMV where dating sim. It's weird because you don't, like, there's no actual player interaction during all of it. You just watch an extremely awkward video for like half an hour with a few breaks to save. Because one of the pirate guys on your team is also played by a real person.
Right.
So the side quest is like trying to get him a date. And I think he's in real life, he's a comedian. So like these segments are about him trying to like riz up these girls while being an absolute clown. And they are like laughing and breaking character because he's just like, I'm trying to remember what he does, but like one of them is like, for example, like putting on perfume, but then putting on way too much and like spraying it like in his mouth, something like that. And they're just like trying not to laugh, and then they laugh, and then, you know, every date goes badly. But I'm just like, this is so weird, even for your standards, Persona.
Yeah.
Or Yakuza.
Yakuza.
I think
that's like, mm-hmm. sometimes when it's dipping into like that kind of live action Japanese comedy, like yeah. TV comedy and whatnot, the vibe is so different from a lot yeah. of what we're familiar with. You see a lot, some of it in like, we're watching a bunch of videos on like old TurboGrafx CD, PC Engine CD mm-hmm. games
oh,
and whatnot.
Yeah, oh, right. Yeah.
And they'll have crossovers with yeah. like these comedians or something. It's like, whoa, this is just a whole different world.
Yeah. I remember finding out JJ and Jeff is like based on like, real comedians
yeah,
from
like
back
actual
then.
Comedian, like a comedic duo. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that whole thing. I'm just like, what really was the point of that? They just felt like doing something. Sega was just like, yeah, sure, whatever. I think overall systems wise, the game does a good job of making you want to do all the side stuff because of the pirate aspect, where it's like the thing everything feeds into, because almost every single side quest, the person will end up joining your pirate crew. Mm-hmm. And then you can use them as like, you know, they man the cannons or they join you when you hijack another boat. So then you end up with like this team of like 80 characters and they're all people you've known from doing side quests or, you know, yeah. the Minato girls eventually join you. Like, it's cool because it got me to do some of the side quests that were in Yakuza 8 mm-hmm. more than I played them in Yakuza 8 because they would have this carrot on a stick that was like, hey, if you play like the Crazy Taxi ripoff like three times, you'll get a new character. And I'm like, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an easy ask.
Because in the original or in Yakuza 8, I played it once and went, okay. And then in this, I was like, oh, but I need this dude to join my crew because he's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So like I played the Pokemon Snap remake. Rip off in this more than I did in Yakuza 8. So like it doesn't take that long. So it's like, it wasn't just a good, like, hey, let's actually engage with these games a little more than once.
Sure.
Cause then there's like the character that joins you if you do good at pool, the character that joins you if you do good at, the batting cages, which that's the one mini game where I always just fucking go ham on it. So like I had already memorized like the timing on that one. Yeah. I think it actually was a good way of like having meaningful rewards for like the side activities that they kind of keep putting them in every game.
Yeah.
And then so you kind of start to tend to ignore them. So this time it was like, hey, let's play those again. And also, I don't think there's anybody for like Shogi or Mahjong.
Just like, yeah,
they play nice.
Yeah. Those are definitely like Mahjong. I've seen people like have to like just learn that for Final Fantasy 14.
Oh, God. They always put in cheat items for the, like, games of skill like that. That's where it's like, hey.
A little more like games of randomness at some point. That's yeah. Mahjong, baby. But yeah, like, having, like, not tying the player's progress to that or keeping them out of, yeah. like, fun things just because, like, oh, I don't know Mahjong or yeah. I can't freaking win.
I broke the economy pretty early on because I got an item that was like, you'll just get blackjack.
Oh, nice.
So I did that. I had two of them, and it lasts like five turns. So I just got blackjack and won. Pot goes up.
Okay.
Get blackjack and win. Pot goes up. Get blackjack and win. Pot goes up. And I did that like for 10 times. So I got like 30 grand.
Yeah, that makes it a lot easier in real life.
Yeah, for real.
Actually, I think I got like 300 grand and just bought every
grade. Oh, nice.
So then it was like, oh, no, the pirate stuff is really easy for like the next 3 hours. and then it kind of gets to the end game balance where it's like, well, I can't upgrade anymore, so I just have to get better at this.
Yeah.
But it was a little defeating when it's like, oh, there's no like better canon or anything. Cause in the main story, they have a part about going on a quest to get a better canon.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't actually result in a thing that you get in the actual game. Oh. It's just like the character saying, we have better cannons now.
Oh,
I thought that was kind of silly.
Yeah.
Just one little
just
weird
little
stumble.
Line. It's like, oh, hey, the cannons are better now. Just trust me, dog.
Trust me. I had already finished like the main pirate storyline at this part. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, boy, that got really hard at the end. Maybe there actually are better cannons. And then when it turned out there weren't, I'm like, huh. Anyways, the main story is pretty good. It goes real big and stupid, as you would expect this game to go at the end. There's a few. One of the last bosses is like a yacht, like a huge, like cruise liner yacht.
Right.
But armed with cannons. Okay. And you just like circle around it and fuck it up.
That's fun.
Yeah. So I finished the game and was like, yeah, that was really fun. But obviously I didn't expect this game to get all emotional, you know, like
it seemed like the silly game that was going to remain lighthearted.
Yeah. It's a very silly Yakuza pirate game. And then the credits roll for like 10 minutes. I think I messaged you two about it, like put my end game screen on there.
Yeah.
And then a post credits scene starts. And it may as well have said, you can only watch this if you've played the other games. Because they do continue a certain plot thread. And I did start crying by the end. I couldn't believe it. The last second, they still got me. So I don't know what that next game is going to be, but they do end this with to be continued.
Oh, interesting. So they're going to follow up from that post-credits scene with the next game.
Like they said, this... The trailer for this was very lighthearted, but it did say, this game is canon.
Interesting.
This is not some like side story delusional thing. Like Majima in the canon offensive after Yakuza 8 just becomes a pirate for a while.
All right. Why not? If anybody in that series is going to just, you know, fuck around and become a pirate for a while, it might as well be the Dan Reichert of the Yakuza series.
They do explain it story-wise. He starts with amnesia, and then you're kind of trying to figure out why. They don't really explain why there's just a bunch of pirates fucking LARPing around at this point.
It's Yakuza. I think they've kind of reached a point where, why do you need to stop and explain anything?
It is so weird because, like, they really just explain to you in very matter-of-factly what happened at the end of Yakuza 8, where it's like, you'll get spoiled if you skip straight to this one.
Sure, yeah.
Like, they do care about their continuity and story, which is weird at times. I don't know. Yeah, so that was a fun time that I forgot about 2 weeks later. Mm-hmm. As it goes, I played another game.
Uh-huh.
John may have heard of this series.
Yeah,
I played a Kirby game.
What?
Oh my god, I forgot we were gonna talk. I forgot to play this one.
You played Kirby game?
Tell me. Except don't tell me if it's not good, because then I'll be sad.
It's good.
Yay!
It's maybe not as good as the one you played. Let's put it in the middle there.
Let's keep our expectations in check.
I played Kirby in the Forgotten Land. Ouch! That is the
one I said I was gonna play.
I had already bought it at that point.
I have it too.
Oh, I'm Pauline Red. I only play new games on my Switch.
I was just immediately more interested in this one because it is 3D.
Also, I also don't relate to that either.
Yeah. We're about to say, like, that
explains it.
The like the differences in our taste just coming out through our Kirby game choices. It is a Kirby game in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I haven't played Kirby 64, but that's not actually a game in 3D, is it? It's just made in 3D, like 2.5D.
Correct.
It's a side scroller.
It's a side scroller, but it also leans a lot more on like the camera, doing weird stuff with the camera than like Return to Dreamland does.
Okay.
They play with it a lot.
Okay. This is just full 3D movement, but
yes.
It's interesting because they've really pared the controls down to like the absolute minimum where you have jump button, you know, action button. One of the triggers will make your character duck, and they even have like auto swallow so you don't have to duck to. I laughed when I saw that's basically what they call it in the menu.
I can't not hear the words auto swallow and not fucking die. You can't do that to me, Nintendo. What the fuck's wrong with you?
I'll have to look again to see what it actually says.
No, it's going to remain auto swallow canonically. We cannot call it anything else other than
but it might just be that because Nintendo has a way of doing things, which is their way is we don't let you change the controls. It's like there's one option in this, which is to switch like the jump button and action button, which I was like, thank God, because the default is wrong.
Right.
The default is jump on the far right button and action on the bottom button.
Oh, I'm fuck. Like, I hate that.
Like, fucking no. So the one option is to switch it to left button
for Y and B. Yeah. Make it like Super Mario World. Yeah. It's not that hard.
Fucking, I couldn't believe the default was wrong. But then next to that, I see like automatic swallow. I'm like, yeah, sure. Yeah, Kirby got that auto swallow.
Got that auto swallow. Baby, my auto swallow game is top notch.
Because you can't press down to swallow now, because that just makes him walk down towards the camera.
You need a button to auto swallow.
Yeah. There's no dashing, which is, I think, unfortunate. It does make the movement.
It makes the movement feel like, because I played the demo for this, and I know that it did feel kind of slow.
It's a little slower than I would like, which is unfortunate. For the first half of the game, I was like, this is pleasant.
Yeah.
Like, it's just kind of a chill game. You're walking around, you swallow some enemies, you get powers, and a lot of it is like exploring to find like all the collectibles in each world that unlock the boss.
Cool.
And then I was having a good time with that. And like, they do a great job with like the world theming.
Good. Like, good, good, good. We complained about that with 3D World.
This is the opposite of 3D World, where every world has a very consistent theme to it, and like the levels flow from one to the next in a pretty logical way all the time.
Oh, Return to Dreamland was good at that too.
Yeah. They have the mouthful items. Very large items that you can't fully swallow, so like Kirby just wraps himself around them.
Brett's familiar with having to deal with this issue, unfortunately.
We're making oral sex jokes.
Yes, there's a lot of oral sex
people in the audience.
Yeah,
that was the auto swallow joke too.
Yeah, swallowing semen.
That was my first
after ejaculation.
Kirby sucking a dick and then being shaped like a dick. That's what happens, is he swallows like a vending machine and just turns into a cube.
Turns into a big cube. It's stupid.
It's really good. So those kind of feel like the Wonder Stars in the last Mario game, where it's like, hey, we'll let you use the Kirby power-ups in any level that you can get them into, but these are very like
gated,
and like you can't really jump with them, so like it's very easy for them to force you to leave them behind when they want.
Right.
But like they also keep the levels interesting, because you're always doing interesting things. Like there's like a roller coaster one.
Yeah.
Which is like, hey, here's like a rail shooter for a minute or two. Mm-hmm. Like really fun level theming like that. John posting of interestingly phallic object in the chat, making me laugh. Yeah.
Shit, I forgot about the name. I forgot the name for the product. The product that you stick a dick into. What's it called?
It's a fleshlight.
That's a Kirby. It's a Kirby fleshlight.
It's a Kirby fleshlight.
Beautiful. All right, now I'm like totally losing. So, anyways, first half of the game, like, oh, this is pleasant. The mouthful stuff is fun, despite the naming. In like the last world, I was like, God damn it, John! John just posted Kirby Goatsy over here.
Yeah, Kirby Goatsy. Let's go.
Sorry. I'm just Googling and I'm finding stuff.
Please.
Right, I'm done.
Yes, does not fly very well since we are not a visual podcast.
In the last like two worlds, especially the last one, they really do start ramping up the amount of enemies and difficulty. I was like, oh, it's an action game now. Fun. And in the last world specifically, I was like, I wish it had been an action game for longer.
It feels like that's kind of what they wanted to do the whole time, because everybody that I know that has finished this game, they get to that point and they're like, why wasn't it this the whole time? It felt like it was building to that, but it just did it too slowly.
Well, that's I'm getting there, John. Kirby games, yeah. Continue.
So anyways, get to the last boss, and then the last boss, and then the last boss, and then the last boss. It does the thing that John kind of lamented earlier of, the climax escalation is real big and sudden. I don't think it has the storytelling chops that Return to Dreamland sounds like.
Okay.
They do a big fucking old climax, though, where I was like, oh, okay, this is not Gurren Lagann Kirby, but like a surprisingly big action climax. So I was like, I was very satisfied with how the game ended. Mm-hmm. And then they go, to be continued, question mark. And you unlock the post game, and I'm like, oh, Oh, right. I haven't played a Nintendo platformer in a while.
Yeah, they're big on post games.
The real Kirby starts here. So, like, that whole thing where I was like, I wish it had been in an action game for longer. They totally let you have the action game for much longer than I realized. Because I haven't even finished the post game yet.
Oh, baby.
I planned to until fucking Koikatsu last night. I'm sitting there at 4 a.m. like, you should go finish Kirby, but I can't let this go.
Oh, yeah. You think you're going to finish Kirby, and then you get into the true arena and you're like, oh, wait a minute. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
This might be a project.
I'm pretty sure I just have the last level and the last boss, but I don't know what they're going to do for the true last boss. It could take longer than I expect.
Just DM us. Just DM me like, yeah, John, it was good.
Yeah. But yeah, when I found out what they were doing for the post game, I was very excited. Like, hey, remember how strong Kirby gets by the end of this game? There's a reason. Because all the abilities can be upgraded, like in a shop, because they make you collect a lot of coins, and then the coins have a reason because you can upgrade the weapons. And then I find out towards the end, there's a second upgrade for all these. And I'm like, why is Kirby getting so strong? The sword. Like, the bombs go from, like, chain bombs to homing bombs and stuff like that, where it's, like, the upgraded tornado is, like, practically this full-screen whirlwind of death. I'm just like, why are they going so extra on these? This game is fucking easy. And then, oh, okay. Yeah. That game's pretty cool. It definitely has surprised me with how much, like, longevity there is to it, because I expected a pretty short and breezy game.
Right.
100%. I mean, that's the thing with, you can play any of the Kirby games for like 5 hours and get the basic arc. Mm-hmm. But like there's so much to this, and I found it very rewarding to engage with.
Yeah. The arena in this, I'm not sure if I'm going to engage with it too much besides the first match, because like, just the act of resetting each fight, grabbing the tomato, walking forward, low time. I'm like, it's a little, it's heavier than I would like.
If only you were playing an older Kirby game that you could play with, practice with save states.
Ah, well.
Because let me tell you, learning those bosses, just drop a save right in front of the boss and then just drill it down till you got the pattern. Okay. Oh, feels real good.
Yeah, I'm bad at the, oh, okay. I know I'm going a little over time.
Don't
I'm sorry,
worry
but
about it. I went over. Don't sweat it.
This fucking game does the Mario Odyssey thing of every single time you get a power, every single time you do a mouthful, it will flash the controls on the screen for a little bit. It's not as obnoxious as Mario was, because that had like a full screen gradient that blocked like the bottom third of the screen, and it never went away. This will go away. This is less intrusive, and it goes away after like 10 seconds, but it is insane. They do stop doing it in the post game, so they fucking knew.
Yeah,
if you're this far, we will finally stop doing it.
It's like the people making the game that they want to make versus the game that Nintendo wants them to make. They got to hide the game they want to make, like, afterwards. Yeah.
It's truly insane because the controls are so simple.
Right. It's not that hard of a game to play.
It's always beat and jump. Beat a jump every single time. Why to do action? And like, there's less actions than something like Kirby Superstar. Sure. Most of them have like two things. Like, oh, if you rapid tap on this on the ice one, it does something different. Or if you do this one in the air, it does something different. But in the end, they're pretty freaking basic. Oh yeah, my point of that was that there's one technique that, as far as I can remember, the game doesn't teach you at all, and it's really goddamn important later on.
I know what this is, because everybody runs into this in the post game.
Is it the dodge? I mean, it literally has to be the dodge.
It's because the dodge.
It's the only thing they don't tell you.
Yeah, they don't really tell you that at all.
If you duck to block and then flick the control stick, he will like bullet time jump to the side.
Yep.
And it's absolutely bizarre because they are so adamant about teaching you press B to jump, press Y to swallow, fucking constantly, that they don't tell you
the simple goddamn dodge mechanic.
It's truly wild, because like the stage 5 boss does this move where he turns into a wheel and zips around the arena. And that's when I was like, hey guys,
I moved circle strafing. Slow.
Circle strafing ain't cutting it this time. Am I missing something? I realize I am. What the F? I'm glad Polly knows about this already.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Everybody I know that played this game, I saw them yell about it at some point.
Well, now you're hearing me yell about it.
And now I know.
Yeah, because there's just this one boss towards the end of the main game where I'm just like, he's really fast. And like when you do a proper dodge, it like slows the whole game down. Like, mm-hmm. boom, boom, boom. It's like, it's like clearly what good. You're supposed to be doing, and that of all things to not teach.
Yeah, it is bizarre. A mechanic you are supposed to have been taught at some point, and it's.
I feel like the stage five boss is when they were supposed to teach it, and for some reason it doesn't.
Because
it's such a specific like, yeah. Hey, boss going really fast. If you're not, you can circle strafe if you're like positioned properly in the middle of the arena. But if you're at the edge, he just fucking immediately turns around and hits you a second time because he does like three dashes. I'm just like, hey guys, something's up here. And yeah, the bosses in the post game are like, you're going to be doing that a lot because they stop having any sort of like cooldown to let you hit them between their moves. Now, during the main game, I was also like John, where I'm like, hey, the default is really strong just because every move that a boss does will fucking throw stars everywhere because it's in 3D now. And you just suck up a few and just counter and like does a ton of damage. It's like the strongest ability by far.
Yeah, I mean, they want it balanced so that you're not just hosed, but it does lead to a point where it's like, well, this is kind of easier than playing in a more aggressive way.
Like every boss, including the final one, I did with the default because I'm like, this feels stronger when I get a hit in and I don't have to worry like sword and hammer have charge up moves that in the post game you do not have time to use.
Yeah,
because they're just not giving you openings at all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I am scared of what the final boss is going to look like on hard mode.
Oh, fuck. I want to play more Kirby now.
So, yeah. This game, it takes a while to get there, but it does have action game chops eventually.
Yep. But yeah, there's.
It should have had.
Go ahead.
It should have had like a dash or just a dodge button instead of making you awkwardly block and then dodge.
Yeah, it's such a weird input.
Yeah.
If you do play Return to Dreamland, I think there's save files on like GameFAQs or whatnot. Mm-hmm. I mean, this isn't, if you're playing the Switch version, it doesn't matter, but
I'm probably going to play the Switch version.
Okay. There are, for other people in the audience, then there are save files for 100% completion on the main game, which lets you just jump into the extra game. And the extra game isn't like, if you played action games, if you like action games, you can just start with the extra game. You'll be fine. Mm-hmm.
I did think that the extra game in this was maybe a little too rough to just jump into. Plus, you'd miss a lot of the charming second sequences that aren't in the second thing.
Well, keep in mind, like the extra game in Return to Dreamland is replaying the game from the start, but you have like half the health bar and the bosses have new phases and stuff.
This isn't quite that. It's a little trimmed down. To be like, hey, here's the sequences we thought could be harder.
Sure.
Cool.
Which is
well, I appreciate that because replaying the whole game was a little much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Kirby. We love Kirby here on the Soxcast.
Yeah, apparently.
Kirby's taken up a substantial amount of time on the Soxcast as of recent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I will just mention this. I'm not going to get into it. I also started my big 100-hour journey into the 100 line Last Defense Academy.
This was my other choice. Like, if I didn't pick up Metaphor, I was just going to dive into 100 line with you. And like, for some reason, Metaphor was just the one that was like, hey, do me, man. Like, let's do it. Let's go.
Do me. Let's do it.
Let's do it. I got, look at this hot red haired elf girl. She's tall. She could like stomp on you. It'd be great.
Yeah. There are some hot girls in Last Defense Academy.
I'm ready.
And they are covered in blood.
Oh god, I feel like I've made a mistake.
This game, it's Danganronpa meets 13 Sentinels, basically.
Yeah, like I'm totally here for it now. I wasn't going into it just because of the way people talked about it going into it just irritated me. I don't know why. It just
irked me and made me angry and not want to play it. But everybody I know that's played it so far is really into it. So it's like, okay. Oh, and it's also Uchikoshi, so I've gotta.
Yeah. I'm really curious where it's going because I'm like 10 hours in and have not hit a story branch as far as I know, made me think,
I know this what game if they're
invisible?
Long.
I know this game is long, but it also gives you like the 100-day countdown to kind of gauge where you are. But I'm like, is it going to be like you don't get a branch until like day 80 and then it just fucking pops off or something? Because that could be what they're doing, or they could just have invisible branches.
Sure. Because
I know stuff happens at day 100 and is when you kind of see the full scope of the game,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
But the CG gallery is funny because page one is like long enough to be for most games.
Oh, no.
Where it has its own scroll bar, so it's like 4x15 or something.
Yeah.
And then there's 8 pages.
I know that the devs said, you know, like, look, this is a game where if this game fails, we're done. Like, we threw everything we could at this game. Like, I've
had some bad news. I don't think they're optimistic about the sales right now.
I think that's unfortunate because it does sound like they delivered. And that's been a thing with 2Q since they came out, is the games they've done just have not delivered, unfortunately, with Death Becomes Something or Other. I can't remember. It was an FMV game. It wasn't great. And then there was World's End Club, which like I have a soft spot for, but I know that it did terribly and it's not a great game. They said that they threw everything at this. It's a last, I know it's critically doing amazing, but in terms of sales, I just don't think it's there, unfortunately.
I will update you next time, and then probably the podcast after that as well.
Yep. That one sounds big.
I'm in a no era era.
No era.
So I'm going to be bringing different things every time from now on.
I'm also trying to like balance things so that I'm not playing one game and nothing else because I do start to go a little crazy doing that.
Yeah.
So that's why I was keeping that with
Kirby
metaphor.
Going.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that this might actually be where I throw in the Kirby game because I don't think that I can just, I don't think, you know, Polly can live on metaphor alone.
Exactly. I think it's good to have a chaser or something a complete opposite, but still a game.
Sure.
He's probably the one that's going to jump into Robobot. Just do like,
I'll probably just get the whole spread. To Dreamland next. I want them to remaster Robobot on a big screen. I don't want to play a 3DS game.
I would have to actually hack my 3DS at this point because finding a copy of Robobot is probably going to be impossible.
Old little babies don't want to play on hack your 3DS and play on a 3DS. No, can't stand playing on handheld.
I totally would hack my 3DS if I knew how. So that for me, it's not a matter.
I've heard
a lot easier these days. So
I've heard it's surprisingly easy to hack your 3DS.
Yeah. So we might look into that. But I also have Forgotten Land. Like I literally bought that. So you know, like I've had that for a while. So Forgotten Land. Like I might just dive into that along with Metaphor.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Is that a show?
I think that's definitely a show.
On the way out, I want to give big congratulations to the team at 1,000 Times Resist. They won a Peabody Award for their video game, and I think that like, if you don't know what a Peabody is, that's kind of the equivalent in media and arts of a Pulitzer. So they won for narrative design, and I think that if there is a game that's going to win for... it's narrative. 1,000 Times Resist is absolutely that. So that game has done nothing but continue to earn accolades that it deserves, and it continues just trucking along. So big shout outs to them. Mm-hmm. I know I'm just saying this because I'm a big champion for that game, and I think everybody should play it.
Was on my list, and then 100 Line.
And 100 Line won. Line one. I mean, I get it. Girls covered in blood. But hey, you know, like, look, 1,000 Times Resist starts with somebody getting stabbed.
I saw the funniest forum post because I'm like, oh, this would hurt Polly to hear.
Oh, no.
Which was, this is the best game I've played since the last game I played. And the last game I played was 1,000 Exorcists.
Hey, it's in good company, right?
Yeah.
That only makes me more excited for the 100 Line.
Yeah.
So is that a show then? Are we good?
Yeah, I think we're good.
All right. So thank you, as always, for tuning in. We always appreciate you giving us your time. But before we kick on out of here, John, tell the internet folks at home where they can find you.
Farawaytimes.itch.io.
And Rhett.
Oh, I don't even know, because I don't have a new one this time. Analyst.com/Rhett. Or it's .co.
It's one of those. You can find me at socksmakepeoplesexy.net/games. And that'll do it. So until we see you again, which maybe it won't be a month this time. It's just, look, life got busy this time around. Yeah. So the cycle had to go a little longer than we thought it might. But hey, until then, we want you to keep yourself nice and comforted, and remembering that we are the podcast that loves you. We're the only ones that love you.
I love you.